Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse 1d6 damage at a time. And hey, guess what? It's time for Supplement Spectacular 3. So gear up to not actually hear about a new role-playing game, but instead to learn about extra material for two old ones. You paid for your whole seat, and you're gonna need it, including the edge and the main butt part. Anyway, it's System Mastery. Hello and welcome back to System Mastery. It's me, the primary host, The Edge, joined as always by my co-host, Main Butt Part.
Hell yeah! I'm Fatty.
Yeah, and I have to be in you too.
That's a shame.
I mean, ultimately, I'm a multimillionaire, but at least I'm not Bono.
At least.
Yeah.
You got that going for you.
So, how you doing this week?
Oh, I'm good. I was having a very sleepy day, but now I'm wide awake and I'm ready to talk to the people about a special little supplement for a game they might not remember.
Yeah, and ultimately, Supplement Spectaculars, this is going to be our third one of these. And what happens with these is, generally, I will pick a book, not start reading it until like 2 days left in my time to have the book, and then realize it's a supplement, panic dramatically, contact John, tell him he has to read also a supplement so that we don't look like morons.
And then we get to go on the air and tell everyone that we're morons.
But at least we don't look like it.
Oh, wait a minute. Why did I say we? You look like a moron.
No, you work with me involuntarily.
I voluntarily work with you, so, you know, who's the bigger idiot?
The fool or the fool that follows him and calls him the main butt part. So that's what generally happens with these. Although this time I kind of had a suspicion that the book I was picking was just a supplement. But yeah, it took me a while to verify. John, I'm in hardcore editing mode right now, as you know, because we have a fourth book on the horizon.
Yes. Yeah, you can see it on the horizon, why it's already peaked the edge of Amazon's book list.
Hey, I'm the edge.
Yeah, it's peaked you.
it's peaked my interest. But yeah, you can find it on Amazon already. It's even though it won't be out until mid-April of next year, the book, The Dungeon Meister Cookbook, which is a follow-up to our cocktail guidebook, but now it's 75 food recipes.
But now it's $75. Fuck you. Pay me.
Well, I do believe in charging way more for RPGs. We try to work in the non-RPG book writing market. We try to work on volume. So please spend the, I think it's $18 that it costs.
Which it definitely won't ever actually cost.
Well, Amazon always drops those prices, yeah. But yeah, it's already up for pre-order right now, but it is not done by half. I am knee-deep in fixing minor corrections. And while John has had a nice sleepy day, there is nothing that makes me saltier than dealing with edits from editors for just hours on end.
Yeah.
They're always right. Like, they're never wrong about anything, really, but...
Except for all those things they're wrong
about.
Well,
okay, this time is my first time writing, like, an actual honest-to-God recipes in a cookbook book, and the style guide is driving me insane. Awesome. And it's not their fault. I know it's a style guide thing, but every time they're like, you know, they're like, you can't put a pinch of salt. You have to put a specific amount of salt. And I'm like, that is... I'm sorry, is this Dungeon Meister a cookbook for robots?
Yes.
But I get it. I know where they're coming from. I'm not mad. In fact, I'm pleased because you're here to take me away from it for a while.
Indeed. I'm here to help whisk you away from the horrible editing monsters that follow you.
Thanks, Calgon.
Ancient Chinese secret, huh?
That seems kind of racist.
That's an old commercial and pretty racist.
It would be pretty great if that was how the commercial ended. Ancient Chinese secret, huh? That's super racist. You should just say it's soap, you idiots.
Come on, Karen, don't do that.
You're as bad as that Glade candle lady. I got them in southern France. Yeah, southern France isn't famous for candle making. That's a weird lie in the first place.
Why would you do that? Jean-Luc.
This is like claiming you have a model boyfriend in Canada, but then you drop Canada and say he's from like Bosnia-Herzegovina or something, and that just raises further questions.
You're like, oh no, you fucked up.
Don't do that. Just say I got them at Target.
The target in the south of France.
Yes, I got it in Nice.
Nice.
On 69th Street in Nice, I assume that's an actual place that exists.
No, of course not.
Probably not. I don't think Nice uses a downtown street layout.
No, probably not. And if they did, it wouldn't be 69. It'd be whatever the French equivalent of that is. 420s and 9, you shit language for assholes.
That would be 89.
You know what I love doing is just going through as many different countries as possible and pissing off everyone there. Hey, you know who sucks? The British. And more than that, the English.
I think it's just Soissons-Neuf. I think that's 69. I'm pretty sure that the French doesn't start going lunatic, do your own math kind of language until the 70s. Because then it's Soissons-Dix-Neuf or 60-10-9.
Yeah, Soissons-Dix-Nuts.
And I'm pretty sure that even depends on what country. Like, I think in Belgium, they just have a word for 70 and 80. But in France, no, it's 4 times 20 plus 8 or whatever, if you want to say, like, 88.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you shouldn't.
And you shouldn't.
Yeah, unless you were, like, born that year. And then you know, sorry.
Oops.
Or I guess if you're a member of the crazy 88 from Kill Bill 1.
Ooh. That would be sad for you.
That's a
thing. To go to France and be like, I'm part of the crazy 420s and 8.
Do you think they use different drug and sex numbers in France because their numbers are stupid? I mean, they aren't. See, like I said, 69 in French is just Soissons-Neuf. It's just 69. So it's fine. But 420 is definitely going to be something.
Yeah.
Actually, it won't. It'll be 420. It'll just be 420.
Well.
So. Anywho, I'm sorry. This is a horrible.
That was terrible.
Digression that went nowhere. Who wants to go first? Raise your hand.
Do you or should I?
I'll go first. How about that? Because my book. I don't know if it came out before your book, but I know that the episode that we did on the book that it is a supplement of was earlier.
I don't know. When did this supplement come out? I'm going to make you look at things.
Making me look at stuff. I don't want to do that. Looks like it came out in 93.
Oh, sweet. Mine came out in 92. Get fucked.
Oh, you want to go first then?
No, I mean, you should go first.
How? My book's older chronologically. Anyway, I am going to be doing the supplement to Ace Agents, which is an old episode that we did, and a rare game that we actually kind of liked. Like,
A good episode,
it's
too.
It's a fun episode. Yeah, we had a fun time making it, and it was a fun game. And hell, people still joke about the bonus content characters from this one.
Hell yeah.
That was a Smoke Trees and...
Smosif K Trees.
Smosif K Trees and Blaze It, because they were G.I. Joe mans.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just as a quick refresher for people who may not... go all the way back to episode 49 of the show. Ace Agents is a G.I. Joe send-up, more or less. You play as crack secret agents from a team that shoots lasers at the enemy team who also shoots lasers, and the whole thing seems to exist like parallel to regular militaries.
Yeah.
You have like this, and they're all celebrities is a big part of it.
Yeah, the more people know you, the better.
Yes, exactly. The vast majority of the game was, you even had like a score that was a PR. You had PRs, your public relations, because it was how famous you were and how much stuff you could get from being famous.
Oh, yeah. Because if you're like Roadblock or whatever, people are like, yeah, great. Mm-hmm. But if you're just like, I'm Dump Truck, you're like, who?
First of all, Dump Truck was hugely popular and everyone loved him. I mean, not everyone can be Sergeant Slaughter or, I don't know, Shipwreck. You know how hard it is to not say Shore Leave?
Yes.
That character wasn't even in the last season of the show, and it's the saddest truth.
I mean, he was.
Was he? Did he show up at all?
Yes.
Okay, that's good to know.
In the episode where they have the meeting between the two.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the one that's where Venture has to moderate. Yeah. Oh, that's a great chance for them to bring him back.
Yeah.
He is almost assuredly my favorite Venture Brothers character. Because he's hyper... He's just basically like, what if Brock was even more fun? Because he has the same level of hyper competence. He's just so cool. Anyway, to get back to it, yeah, so the idea is you build yourself like a G.I. Joe man, and you go off and you have adventures, and the game was very proprietary. It wasn't really like a lot of other games. It had its own stat structure. It was primarily a percentile roll under, but the way that you generated those stats was actually pretty basic. You just added a skill and a to your stat, and then that created a number that you had to roll under on percentile dice to accomplish anything.
Mm-hmm.
So real quick here, let me just dig up a copy of a character sheet so I can go through the stat values and so on. Here we go. They are, in order, strength, dexterity, fitness, intellect, will, perception, attractiveness, and public relations. And one thing I remember liking a reasonable amount about this game was that the attractiveness value was not, like, you know, it didn't mention the opposite sex at all, and mostly it was about how you were able to interrelate with your public.
Uh-huh.
How hot you were was not really like, could you seduce the enemy team or anything? It was more like, do you play well on camera?
Yes.
Which is pretty great. It works, it interrelated well with the public relations score. Each one of the stats you generated by rolling 4d10, so you ended up with a range between 4 and 40, but with an average somewhere in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And you could build those stats up. In fact, one of the things that was kind of neat about this game was that the stat and skill spreads showed up often. Like, your character accelerated rapidly, because the way it worked was you didn't really get XP as you were making your way through the game so much as it was like, oh, every time you finish a mission, you get a D10 to upgrade your stats with, and you get 2D10 to upgrade your skills with, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So it was kind of Final Fantasy 2-ish in that it was incremental gains every time you did anything, as opposed to waiting for breakpoints.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a big fan of that. Other stuff about it, it had two health tracks called CP and SP. And well, I honestly do not remember what those
cock
stand for.
Cock points and suck points.
Yeah, they're cock and suck points. No, one of them is, I remember what the C stands for. S is like stun. So that's the track for getting knocked out, where C is like the actual violence stat, like if you're dying or something.
Yeah.
And it had one of my favorite little send-up jokes about the G.I. Joe connection there, which was that the way that the game worked was everyone ran around with red and blue lasers, not because they were cutting-edge state-of-the-art technology, but because lasers in the universe of Ace Agents don't hit that hard. And they inflict S damage as opposed to inflicting C damage, which means it's way hard to kill someone with a laser because nothing tanks your PR score like needlessly murking people in public.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, if I go up and I'm like, yeah, I just fucking killed Cobra Commander, and was like, why the fuck did you do that?
It ruined the storyline.
I loved Cobra Commander.
Yes, because part of it, the other gimmick about the game was that the universe of like the G.I. Joe, the Ace Agents as they were, existed in the public eye. It was like, if the G.I. Joe were real, was basically the premise of it. So
yeah.
So that there were still action figures and comic books and TV shows and all of that stuff about the Ace Agents, even though they actually existed. It was serialized. We keep going back to the Venture Brothers, but it's basically the story of the Rusty Venture Show.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of neat. Your PR score would influence things like your income, because it would be like, how often are you showing up in the comics? What exclusive deals are you getting? Are there action figures of you? You get a cut of that.
Hell yeah, you can go on, I don't know, talk shows and shit.
Yeah, so that was kind of neat. So that's why you didn't want to murk anybody, because that wasn't popular and it messed with the writers' jobs. I mean, granted, the writers were primarily just interpreting what actually happened and writing it in a more fun way. But still, you don't want to lose fun characters.
No, you don't.
And part of what made the bad guys of the game, codename Python, which I don't even think stands for anything.
It might.
They put the dots in there because you're gonna. But Python's whole, one of the reasons they're grumpy is because they don't get licensing deals and shit.
Yeah, they're evil.
They're evil, so who's working with them? Which is funny because they still use the lasers. And I'm like, you know, if you're that mad, just try and kill the G.I. Joes, you know?
Well, once that happens, then the G.I. Joes start using guns, and then everything's fine.
I think that might literally be it, that they're just keeping it at cat and also cat, as opposed to going all into cat and mouse games. Or like, you know, the moment they kill a G.I. Joe, the U.S. military is going to be like, all right, you kill one of our little JV henchmen.
you killed one of the people we like to put in the spotlight, so now we got to slap you. Plus, that way, they're like, if we keep it to we shoot lasers, then that means we don't die, and then we can leave later, because they'll just let us go.
Look, the military has its ablative shield made of people who have names that are simple compound words that people think would make good names for soldiers. And the moment you accidentally put a fucking bullet in Tube Top, you know we're going to get mad at you.
Oh, no. You fucked up Slap Chop, and he's coming for you.
Man, I want to build a whole team of nothing but shit that you can just buy on TV.
Hi, I'm OxyClean.
I've got the power of oxygen in every blast. I'm ShamWow. I'm a magician.
I wear this tuxedo on missions.
It's made of that ShamWow crap. That chamois cloth.
Ooh, chamois.
I'm so dry, you guys.
You guys are so dry.
I'm so dry. I'm dying. Avenge my death.
That's okay. I'll help you. I'm Camelback.
Is that one that's on TV on the regular? I don't remember.
I don't know.
Eh, might as well be. I don't
Fuck
know.
Fuck it. I don't care.
You could also get like Garden Weasel.
That's a great name for one.
It's probably more of a bad guy one, right?
Garden Weasel? Yeah, probably.
We've been infiltrated by the Garden Weasel. He's not your garden variety weasel.
Oh, wait, yes, he is.
No, he specifically is.
that's very much exactly what he is.
It's Eggmaster. He's firing tubes of pre-cooked egg.
Oh, no, Silver Bullet. He actually kills people with silver bullets.
All right, so the game that the supplement that I have, so that's your basic primer on the game. It was fairly straightforward. You assembled skills and rolled under them and had a fun time trying to keep your PR score nice and high so that you were popular and you were making lots of money while mm-hmm. also fighting the forces of Python.
Yes.
So the supplement for it is...
You know, every time I go to the bathroom, I'm fighting the forces of Python. You know what I mean?
Huh? Anyway...
Cock points.
Cock points. That's what the C stands for. Thank you for finally telling me. Ace Supers is the supplement. And it is a superpower supplement. So basically it takes Ace Agents and makes it into a superhero game.
Now let me ask you a question.
Mm.
Do you still have PR?
Yes. In fact, the neat thing about the Ace Supers supplement is that, for the better or worse, it is almost entirely just a sequel to Ace Agents.
Ooh.
And I mean that in every sense. I mean, it you can take an old Ace Agents character and literally just give them some points. You give them like 5d10 and say, here, spend these on superpowers. Now you're a character in Ace Supers. So the characters are pretty much strictly just better because they have superpowers, but they're mm-hmm. the exact same thing as Ace Agents otherwise.
So it's basically just taking Ace Agents and turning it from being... a G.I. Joe pastiche to being like S.H.I.E.L.D.
Kind of, yeah. Or like, I don't know, Mask or something where maybe if there was an equivalent G.I. Joe where the G.I. Joes had minor superpowers, but they were still like a crack military team. Like
I mean, that's basically agents. Just S.H.I.E.L.D.
Is that, yeah, you know what? That makes sense. There's enough super people on S.H.I.E.L.D. that it makes, you know, you get your Mockingbird, although she doesn't have powers. Hang on. You've got your Quake and Spider-Woman and other S.H.I.E.L.D. agents who have superpowers.
Yeah.
Name any three.
Any other three. You know, Nick Fury.
Abigail Brand until she founded S.W.O.R.D. I think she has powers.
Maybe.
Does Nick Fury technically have powers?
I mean, he drank from a fountain that is made him, like, he lives for way longer and he's slightly stronger and whatever. So he is definitely not a standard human.
Okay. All right. So he is slightly enhanced in some way.
Yeah.
In usual comic books.
In his CPs. You know what I mean?
I don't know if they count like Nick Fury or Sam Jackson's Nick Fury as being more human than human.
The MCU Nick Fury is not the I was in World War II and then I found like the Fountain of Youth. That's a weird story.
Yeah, although I guess he is a Skrull right now, right?
I mean,
last we saw him.
I don't know.
Anyway, to get back to it. So basically, yeah, it is also a story sequel to Ace Agents. So not only do you build a character by just taking a regular Ace Agents character and slapping superpowers on them, which I'll get into how to do that, but also it is a story about how in the Ace Agents world, superpowers were developed by by scientists working for Ace, and they formed a group called Aces, which obviously the S just now stands for super, so it's whatever ACE stands for, supers.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And that goes along with the wild card series of supers that were known as Aces.
Hmm.
In the wild card series.
That's true. You got a good point there.
Yeah, look at me knowing things.
Is that wild card? Like, that an Image Comics or something we're talking about?
No, wild card was a book series.
Role-playing game? Oh, that. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. By
George R.R. Tolkien.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, good. Then we can move on.
Yes.
And no one will be mad at us.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. There we go.
Uh-huh.
So basically, it's a world where they were experimenting on people to attempt to like enhance them in various ways, but they kept accidentally like hurting them or killing them, or it just didn't work, until eventually a single experimental accident occurred and a person stepped into a beam when she should otherwise not have. And for the first time ever, the system worked and she developed laser eyes. So basically, she has Cyclops eyes,
mm-hmm.
but also has kind of a vampire face with super hearing. So she's got super hearing.
She's the one on the cover.
Yes, exactly. So the cover features the first super to appear in this universe. She has like giant bat eyes, and also you can see she's got glowy blue she has giant bat ears and glowy blue eyes going on.
Yeah, she's very much like a Morbius.
Yes, except that she combines the powers of, I don't know, Cyclops and Daredevil, kind of, because she has like super hearing, but anyway, her name is Laser Bat.
Well, you can't argue with that.
Yeah, the I gotta say, the switch, the pastiche switch from being all about G.I. Joe characters to being all about superheroes has not done well for the name game. They aren't awful, but now you find characters' names, they still have like a lot of G.I. Joe names, like the villains are named things like Headmistress and Wrong Way, but the heroes are named stuff in this book like Robin Hood and Maid Marian.
Oof. Ouch.
And Robin Hood, of course, is like the archer hero.
Yeah.
And he's literally Robin Hood. Like, he wants to rob from the rich and give to the poor and all that. But they do stick very much to a kind of He-Man difference between good and evil. Yes. Where, like, you know, the major evil villain is named like Stenchor or something because he's like a giant robot that smells real bad.
Excellent. That's a great idea.
Yeah, I don't think it's Stenchor. I think it's Dissentor or something like that.
I mean, that's a real, real big Doom Patrol vibes.
I've never read Doom Patrol. I've only ever watched the show, and the show makes it feel like the series is way more portentous than I think it actually is.
Oh, no. I mean, the actual comics are mostly just weird nonsense. Like, take the weird nonsense from Doom Patrol, mm-hmm. make it slightly less sad.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that's fair. Yeah, because Doom Patrol is just aggressively sad.
Oh,
like, the show is just like, Jesus, this is unrelenting.
You've made me cry about Flex Mentallo. How dare you?
I mean, at least Flex Mentallo has a happy ending and is one of the best characters the show ever did.
I mean, Flex Mentallo's, not to spoil anything, but his one true love disintegrates in his arms after being apart for like 50 years. No, he doesn't exactly have a happy ending.
Sure he does. He ends up living on Danny the Street, and the two of them have a good relationship, and he ends up becoming
like... He makes an entire street orgasm.
Yeah, he has like a... He hangs out with Danny the Street, and he lives with him now, even when he becomes like Danny the Tire. Danny the Tire, yeah. So he finds happiness in the end, and he's still a fucking amazing character. Honestly, the thing about that show is that it's unrelentingly sad, and I know we've kind of diverged now into reviewing the current show, Doom Patrol. As much as it's deeply sad, the character work is fantastic on this.
Oh, it's amazing. It's a great show.
Yeah. Like, they've made some changes to the characters so that they can pile on the sadness, like, you know, having poor Elastigirl, like, have no powers beyond turning into a gross
blob,
as opposed to her usually just being like, what if the DC universe also had Professor Impossible? Why can't I think of Mr. Fantastic's name?
Yeah. What if it also had a Mr. Fantastic and it was an elongated man?
Or Plastic Man.
You know, what if it had a third one?
There's probably a third one already. I'm sure there's a villain one. Oh, you know what? Martian Manhunter probably counts. He's pretty fucking stretchy. What, you saying that reference is a bit of a stretch?
Hey! Please talk about the book.
Okay,
please
fine.
Clap.
So, Laser Bat's the first one. And right after that, as soon as they discover that they can make supers, they start making supers as fast as they can. It's not a very safe procedure. It can lead to some unexpected side effects, like having, for example, giant ears, or one of the heroes on the hero team is named Chernobyl Man, because, yeah, he's basically has Superman powers, but also he's aggressively radiation-y, so not safe to be around, can't really live near other people, that kind of stuff.
All right.
What are you looking up? What are you doing? What's going on?
Hey.
You're freaking me out.
Don't worry about
it. I'm peering behind the veil.
Don't worry. I should always have my laptop out during these so I can look things up without having to get my phone, where I have to then swipe and do little nonsense things, which is terrible.
I understand completely. That said, it just looks like you doubt me in some way.
Oh, no, I don't doubt you. I was looking up the character that I was thinking of when you said that, which was, I had forgotten.
What, like Radiation Man or whatever
Duke
his name?
Duke Nukem.
Oh.
The Captain Planet villain,
yes.
Duke Nukem.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Duke Nukem, the video game.
Right. Isn't there a Marvel villain or semi-villain named Radiation,
There's Radiation Man or Radioactive Man.
Radioactive Man. That's what I was trying to remember, yeah.
Yeah, which is DC.
Okay. And he's just like a green guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but anyway, Chernobyl Man's not even that important. All I'm trying to indicate is that it's not a 100% safe or effectively predictable procedure.
Yes.
You don't know what's going to happen to you.
You might be some kind of a thing of a man.
Yeah, exactly.
You might turn into some kind of a weird Hulk.
Yeah, or perhaps a fuzzy blue demon.
Or maybe you'll be some kind of Spider-Man.
Some kind of Spider-Man. Anyway, So as a result, while the procedure to become a super is available to every member of Ace if they want it, a lot of them turn it down. And of course, the tech race has advanced considerably over the course of super time as well, because super invention is one of the powers you can acquire. So now everyone who doesn't have superpowers is usually running around in superpowered battle suits that are specifically designed to counter super people.
There you go.
So if you do voluntarily sign up to become a super, you get a bunch of new powers. Maybe you don't look quite right. The game doesn't have rules for that or anything. Your look is entirely up to you. But you make more money now because you voluntarily went through a difficult procedure.
Yeah, they blasted you with weird stuff and made you come out the other end.
Exactly. And it's got kind of that Venture Brothers vibe where, like, remember that one time when Dr. Girlfriend was perusing the guild, like, and they were like, we're gonna sign you up for a new villain persona, take a dip in a vat of boiling minx, and they were like running her through origin stories that she could have.
Yeah,
it's like that here. You don't know really what your origin story is gonna be, but it's gonna be something wacky and you're gonna come out with superpowers that relate to it.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Now, the neat thing about the way that this game's superpower system... Oh, and by the way, eventually Python moles manage to steal the super tech, and of course they have their own bad guys.
Of course, obviously.
Go. So, just in case you're wondering why there's bad guy ones if Ace invented the procedure, it's because they were infiltrated by Python.
It's because they were infiltrated by Garden Weasel.
Damn that guy!
I hate that guy!
But I must work with him. He's always digging up my azaleas.
Damn you, Garden Weasel!
I was once a man with azaleas!
He keeps digging up our azaleas!
So, the neat thing about the way that powers in this game work is that they come in three pillars.
Same.
Very specific.
Weird.
Wait,
but go on.
Are they the three types of classic pillar? Do you only come in Corinthian, Ionic, and Doric pillars? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Normally dork.
Doric. It's not just dork.
I said it. Dork. Said it fast.
Now someone's going to point out that Ionic isn't right and neither is Corinthian. I don't fucking know.
It's rich and leather.
Mm-hmm. The Corinthian's that guy with mouths for eyes. I'm up to speed.
Yeah. He got that smiley eyes.
Yeah. And also, I think he's a book in the Bible.
Yeah, Corinthians.
Yeah, and I don't think it has anything to do with it.
Not even a little.
Like, there's no way to draw a metaphorical parallel between Corinthians and the Corinthian.
Nope.
When that's just the way Gaiman likes to work.
And that's just the way things go.
Yeah. Anyway, so when I say pillars, I mean there's offensive, defensive, and general powers that you can choose from. Mm-hmm. But rather than force you to abandon the general powers because... obviously, you should just invest heavily in offense and defense and, you know, be a powerhouse. You can't, because you get X number of points to invest in each one of those pillars. And anytime you finish a mission, you get further dice, again, subdivided up between the three pillars. So you're constantly growing in all three categories.
That's a great choice.
It's a neat way to do it.
I like that decision.
Mm-hmm. So the powers that you can pick in overall, they're fairly straightforward. Going down the list of the powers here isn't going to be especially interesting because there's nothing that's too wild or out of the ordinary. Basically, offensive powers are separated between beams and various ways to enhance your physicality so that you can punch harder or punch. And when you punch, it's a poison punch or something.
And when you bark, bees come out.
And the baby looked at you and then you took damage.
Aw.
Baby damage.
Oh, no, baby damage.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get that sweet baby marrow.
But, you know, it's the pretty basic stuff, like flame blasts and energy bolts and cold blasts. They do a set amount of damage, which is equivalent to your PS, which is your power score. Power score is generally, this game is all percentile stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put points into a power, that is your power score. If you put 30 points into Flame Blast, you have a Flame Blast of 30. When you shoot with it, it does 30 damage, probably, unless it has a multiplier listed here. So, for example, if you're looking at Cold Blast does your PS times 1/2 in SP, and a PS times 1 in CP damage, which means that it does more real damage than stun damage, because I guess Frostbite's serious business.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. But this game doesn't really do rolled damage. Instead, you calculate the values of damage and then just say, like, I do 35 damage to you. What is your response? And they go, oh, you subtract my armor.
Oh, I tell you to fuck off.
I tell you to fuck off, and we go get blintzes.
Let's go get a pizza. Yes, and let's get a pizza.
The other thing I like here is that this game, for a superheroes game from the early 90s, doesn't have, like, power points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have a power score, which is a static score you use to determine the efficacy of your power, but you can just shoot it all day. There's nothing stopping you. It's not like the Sega Genesis.
Oh, yeah. No one's like, well, I'm Cyclops, and I shot my lasers twice, yeah. So I guess I just hang out.
It's not like Sega Genesis X-Men, where Wolverine's claws are a power, and you can only have them out for 30 seconds without finding a canister of claw juice, I guess.
Mmm, claw juice. That's just Monster Energy.
Pretty sure it's crab juice from that Simpsons scene. Clav Kalash or crab juice. No, it was Mountain Dew or crab juice. That's right. I'm remembering my Simpsons jokes. Give me the crab juice. Most of the offensive powers also have a little rider that, you know, kind of makes sense for the type of power they are. So Cold Blast, for example, can freeze people to the ground or freeze bodies of water, generally lower the temperature of things. Flame Blast can set stuff on fire.
Yeah, yeah.
You get the basic idea. Electrical Bolt can be sent. It's a test. You can use it to, like, try and turn on a lamp or something. Ah. But you have to test to see if you don't, you know,
just
shoot.
Blast a lamp.
Exactly. Because shooting that little power is pretty difficult for even the most well-trained super, and so they might accidentally just blow shit up. It's a test to try and be like, oh, I'll turn on or I'll open that door, that electric locked door, with my lightning shoot.
Zap.
Mm-hmm. You've also got some fun ones here. You got Gravity Wave. Illusions are a regular thing in this. There's an illusion offense, defense, and a couple of them in the general powers category, so that you can create kind of an illusionist. But it's got that kind of 90s illusion vibe where it's just worse than just shooting someone with anything else.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where it's
the whole, like, you can do a shadow version of a spell,
yeah,
and it's half as good. Okay, well.
Unless they disbelieve it, and then it's useless. And you're like, what's the upside? What is the upside to doing this?
Why am I getting this instead? Because you like the idea of illusions.
Yeah, I think I'll just make my character without the illusions, and then when I'm done creating them and I'm doing all the skinning and building of the character, I'll say they're illusions. Ta-da.
Ta-da!
ShamWow! Got my character made already.
Yeah.
Defenses is pretty much a very similar structure. The basic defense mechanic is you take, you get things like, oh, I have ice armor, I have flame armor, I turn my skin to steel, I'm just unusually tough. Very similar to the City of Heroes model, which is kind of prophetic because this predates City of Heroes by, like, I don't know, 15 years. There's also some that are like, you know, hyper reflexes,
Viper beams.
There's also a bunch of weapons you can choose from in the offensive. I didn't want to forget to mention that. Super claws, super boomerang, super hammer, that kind of thing. Where you're just like, I do damage, but in the form of this boomerang.
Yeah.
Notably popular with Australian heroes.
Huh. Who'd have thought?
Popular with mutant kangaroos. Yeah, they do that a lot. This book's got some, I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say it. It's a 93 comedy book, so there's going to be some iffy jokes. Nothing so much so that, like, I would remain mad at it to this day. There's no opposite sex in here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. There is, however, do you remember this joke from the original Ace Agents book, John? That there was a guy who was a member of the Ace team whose job it was to hand out equipment.
Yes.
His name was Lenny. And his whole deal was he didn't want to give you any equipment, but he wanted to give you enough equipment that you wouldn't die, because if you died, then he wouldn't get any of the equipment back.
Yes.
So it was his job to know exactly how much equipment to give you so that you'll succeed in the mission and come back without giving you too much equipment, because he doesn't like giving you stuff.
Yes.
But he also doesn't like losing stuff. So there's this whole character, and there's whole skills revolving around how can you mess with this guy and try and get more out of him than you need to, and punishment mechanics for what happens if you try that too much. Well, obviously, he, of course, still exists. Now he hands out super tech. You can get battle suits. They're like Iron Man level gear. In fact, you can, if you want to, you can build your whole character and say, oh, yeah, my character doesn't have superpowers. He's in a robo
suit. Yeah.
There's no difference between the two choices. You just say, my character's in a robo suit, and he just shoots energy out of his robot armor, and it's identical to playing a character who shoots energy out of his hands, because why make unnecessary complexity?
Great.
Mm-hmm. Well, so Lenny is still the exact same joke here, and I have forgotten where the hell I was going.
I don't know.
How you doing? By the way, episode 49, the how you doing episode? I'm kidding. It was an expounded universe.
Yes.
I genuinely cannot remember what the fuck I was talking about.
You're talking about jokes, and then you started talking about Lenny.
Thank you. Jokes. That's what I wanted to get to. Thank you, John. Yeah. Jesus Christ, my brain. I've been editing too long.
You got a bad brain.
I'm going to clean this up. Let me just check the timestamp real quick.
No. Don't.
34. 34, 32. I'm going to remember that.
Yeah. remember it. Jeff won't will remember this.
I won't.
No, he won't.
No, I won't.
Parentheses. No, he won't.
Forget everything. Anyway, the joke was that someone asked Lenny for too much shit. Like, they were pushing Lenny too hard. It was a guy named, like, Captain Hercules or something. It's a one-off. He's not a character in the book anyway. It's just a joke. So Captain Hercules pushes Lenny too hard, and Lenny gives him an untested serum, and now he has to go by Captain Aphrodite.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So you know that. This is one of the standard, the evil drug forced my sex change type joke, which I'm assuming just flew in the, you know, Mask era.
Yeah.
Or not Mask, Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
Era. No, it doesn't fly anymore, and it's not. I'm not going to blame them for that. It's just weird to see it in an older. It's an older book.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
All right.
So there's a lot of generic powers in addition to the offensive and defensive powers, but again, they're pretty much the stuff you'd expect. You got your teleporting, your phasing.
I assumed most of your movement powers would be in generic.
A lot of them are actually under defensive.
Huh. So like flying is defensive?
Well, not flying. Flying is generic, but phasing and teleporting are both, in this book at least, primarily defensive powers. There's a regular teleport you can get in general as well, but mini porting, as it's known, is one of the cooler defensive powers.
So just dodge porting.
It is. It's reflexive. When something shoots you, you might just automatically teleport 3 feet to one side or the other, just to not get hit by it.
Neat.
It's a neat little power. But yeah, there's a lot of general powers as well. But they're pretty much exactly what you think they are. Form manipulations, healing, stuff like that. So it's pretty neat. And after that, there's a whole big section of, more backstory for the game. Obviously, now that you're playing as superheroes, you're going to be getting primarily in superhero fights. You're not supposed to go out and beat up just a wave of Python non-powered agents. That's just a dick move. Plus, it eats up the work that's left over for the regular ace agents who don't have powers and are still trying to make an honest buck here.
Oh, yeah. You got to let them do their thing, and then you can do your thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's also a couple of new agencies out there that are floating around. I think there's one called, like, Muscle or something like that. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on it at the moment. But it is basically the Justice League.
Oh,
so,
good.
So in case you were like, all right, well, obviously we've got our kind of G.I. Joe versus our kind of Cobra, or I guess, I don't know, we could say it's S.H.I.E.L.D. versus a Serpent Society or something.
Ah.
Whatever generic evil organization S.H.I.E.L.D. routinely fights.
Hydra.
Oh, right, Hydra. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With all their powered people, like Fenris and
Madam Hydra
and Agent Vaughn killing you guy.
My favorite. Russian Gaevich
is how you say. Yeah. Okay. So then there's an additional couple of agencies and so on. And then we finally get into a list of the current supers that are operating out of the Ace Agents group, some of which are remnants of the previous Agents book, where they'll be like the superpowered personas of the, because Ace Agents is one of those games where every chapter is introduced by someone.
Mm-hmm.
They tended to stick to the sidebar, so it wasn't irritating like it is in other books that we've read.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of those. So now you get to meet Laserbat and Captain Chernobyl and Robin Hood and just Maid Marian.
Robin Hood, just
regular ass Maid Marian.
Great.
Commander Cranium, who has psychic powers. Hummingbird, who's a little bird guy.
You
get the basic concept here.
Yeah.
Jennifer Collins. She never picked a superpower. Her deal is that she's like a sexy cop.
Great.
And let me see. The only one I thought was interesting from the good guy side was Miles the Precognitive Peacock, who's literally just a peacock who can see the future. But all he can really do is peck and caw about it because he doesn't speak any languages or anything.
Good.
So that's fun. Disgustor, by the way, was the name of the stinky villain.
Ah.
Yeah. Headmistress. She has mind control powers.
You get it?
And
headmistress?
Yeah, because she gets all up in your head, and then I guess she's
going to use those SPs, you know what I mean,
uh-huh.
For that headmistress.
Slam Dance, who's an evil punk. Killer Watt, who's like, you know, a live wire type,
mm-hmm.
But they've done a fun thing where they say that because she's constantly radiated with static electricity, her hair's like she's just always touching a Van de Graaff generator.
Great.
That's fun. And so on, all the way up to the Boogeyman, the evilest of the villains. He's just like an evil ghost who shows up and kills people.
Oh no, an evil ghost.
And then you've got some neutrals. You've got, you know, Kick Sidekick and Cuddles the Annihilator.
Great.
Jokes. They're jokes.
Great.
They're fun.
Great.
So it's a good book. I was okay with this. I like the concept. I'm going to go ahead and say that about the supplement. It doesn't just add stuff to the world so much as it serves as a official sequel to the first book, which I generally like in my supplements to see, like, oh, let's move the story forward a little bit. Let's Let's introduce new layers, like almost like you're playing a legacy RPG.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I don't always like it. Like if it's too metaplotty and it's, you know, you can't even play the first book because the second book changes things in a way that don't make any sense to the first book, then I'm fine. But this is kind of like the progression from Saints Row, the Saints Row games.
Mm-hmm.
You ever played your way through Saints Row and it just gets increasingly stupid, and by the fourth one you have fucking superpowers?
Yeah.
This is like that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, from the 90s, so it's fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
There you go. That's my book.
Fabulous.
I liked it.
Thank you for your book report.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed hearing it as much as I enjoyed reading it. In summation, A Supers is a land of contrast. John, I think it's your turn to go.
Yes, it is. Now.
Oh, I talked a long time. I thought I was...
why I was getting the book out.
No, you're trying to do that five-minute window light like I'm a stand-up comic or
yes.
something. Yeah. I was worried I had to push for time.
You looked at the timestamp and said more than a half hour's worth of time. What is wrong with your brain?
I knew I'd have to delete it. In my brain, I was like, well, I'm at 34 minutes, and obviously I have to delete 34 minutes, which means I'm at probably 24 minutes. That's what makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, when you delete 34 from 34, you obviously end with 24.
Let me tell you the worst thing about this conversation is that it's going to reference something I'm supposed to delete.
Let me tell you the best thing about this conversation.
Nothing's getting deleted. I'm just going to use a truncate silence so people aren't listening to me turn around.
Ha.
Fine. You get an uncut episode, everybody.
Veiny.
Thick.
So.
Ribbled for her pleasure and his. Let's not be crazy. And everybody's.
Everybody's.
Anybody's pleasure. Anyone who likes ribbled things.
Episode 158 of the podcast was chill.
God damn it.
It was super chill.
I just, like, literally, when you pulled out the supplement, I remembered the words on the back of fucking chill.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm going to tell you this right now. I tweeted about it, but chill is, because I wanted to listen to it for this episode, it is the first time in 8 years that I have ever listened to our podcast.
I've listened to quite a few of our old episodes just because I want to see how we're evolving and so on, but John never goes back.
Oh, no. I've listened to a few Expounded Universe episodes when I was in a car with a friend who was listening to it, but System Mastery, I have not ever gone back and listened to, and this is the first time, and I was like, oh, that's a good episode.
Mm-hmm.
Chill was actually fun and funny, and it's not a game that most people would remember, though, because it's a horror game that's kind of... You know, whatever.
We've done like four or five of those. We've done Don't Look Back and the RPG 13 B-movie horror system and so on and so forth. And the ones that are just sort of like horror the game tend to blend together.
Now, the one interesting thing about Chill is that this one actually provided you with the world that you were in. So many horror games are just like, I don't know, maybe a mummy shows up, or, oh, you're just in a generic horror thing and a slasher will get you.
Yeah.
In Chill, there is an organization called SAVE that is pretty much like the Watchers from Buffy. It's
right.
A bunch of British assholes that got together and were like, ah, I believe the unknown exists, that there's magic and demons, my good fellow. Let's go out there and try and get them in the Crucible.
God, this is all coming back to me now. I'm literally remembering there's like a story where some member of SAVE sees a bunch of people riding their horses along a beach, and there's like villains chasing them and shit. Oh, God. Wow.
Yep. One of those things where it was like, ah, yes, this one British guy was like, I discovered psychic powers existed, and now I need to convince other people.
Yeah.
And that was SAVE.
Mm-hmm.
But then also the book was like, and then there was a concentrated attack against all save things, and now it sucks, and that organization doesn't exist, and I don't know why we spent half the book telling you about
it. Yeah, there's like so much fucking build up to save, and then they're like, oh, by the way, save is 90% gone, so if you join save now, you get like a flashlight and a pad of paper, and they tell you to document things,
yeah.
And they just send you out there to get eaten by serial killers.
Yep.
Yeah.
So... The original Chill, as well, it's also a percentage-based game, but it is point-buy for your system, so you would put points into your stats, and then you would have points for skills, and the skills only had three levels.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a student, teacher, or master level,
yep.
And it had a cumulative bonus to what you would have per thing.
Okay.
And the whole game was not... terrible mechanically. The worst thing about it was its fear mechanic,
yeah,
which was that you know, every horror game is going to have some sort of fear mechanic, or, you know, you've got a sanity check or some shit like that. And this one was no different, but even if you were to get the best possible thing, because there were, like, a low-end success, and then a medium, and a high, and a colossal.
Right.
If you got the colossal, it was still, oh, you're stunned for a round. And that was for anything with any sort of fear check, which meant, hey, there's a box of snakes, and you're like, oh, fuck me! Which means every zookeeper is constantly in a state of like, a bear!
Well, I have to assume it's like a supernatural fear. Like, if you're...
No, because it is straight up like, oh, you see a tiger. It has a fear thing. It's not a supernatural tiger. It's just scary, which means every fucking person that goes to a zoo is like, let's go see the tigers.
Hey, look, a tiger.
Beep, beep. Beep.
That means nothing to anybody but us.
Yep.
Oh, I guess Claire.
I guess. Hey, look, a science dog.
All right, so...
Nope, not explaining it. Moving on.
I'm not explaining it. No, I was going to say, I when I remember reading it, I thought it was like, okay, the idea is that if you see these things in situations where you wouldn't expect to. So it was like, you know, the maximum fear value of a tiger is, oh shit, unexpected tiger, you know, like...
Yeah, you see a tiger in the forest, and that should fuck your shit up.
Yeah, you see a tiger in a zoo, you're like, oh, I'm supposed to see a tiger here. I've walked past a bunch of tiger-themed paraphernalia to get to this location. I'm next to a tiger gift shop.
Except that's not the way it works.
There's a sign that says tiger here. Do not be stunned for one round.
Except that's not the way it works. And
I know
it even had rules for like, oh, do you see the same thing that scared you over and over? You'll eventually start to get like used to it. But if you just see it, you're like, ah, fuck.
And of course, being stunned for a round is a pretty significant penalty, which means that the game had a fear mechanic that could lock the game down pretty hard.
Well, especially it was bad when you're like, we're a group of, you know, they're called envoys for save.
Yeah.
But you're like, ah, our group of envoys goes to some place to check out maybe a haunted house. A ghost appears. Our entire group does nothing for a round, at least.
Mm-hmm.
That's if everyone is making a colossal success. If not, we just probably run away or cower or do nothing for multiple rounds.
Yeah.
So, chill, sort of interesting, good episode. I went and we got several supplements for this from friend of the show, Richard.
That's right, yeah, he had a whole bunch of these.
So, you know, I had my pick from several things. I could do lycanthropes,
mm-hmm.
I could go specifically into, like, vampires. There were a bunch of separate little things, but I decided, for a game from 1990 and a supplement from 1992, I wanted to look into what they were going to do talking about voodoo in their horror game. Jeff, I'd like to ask you a question. On a scale of 1 to 10, how bad do you think it is on this voodoo book?
I mean, I see that picture of what looks like a half David Bowie on the cover, and I'm a little worried, I'll tell you that right away. Like, that their cover for the voodoo book is some white dude with Egypt eyeliner going on. That's I'm not super enamored of Peacock Hairman teaching me about, you know, voodoo, a religion that he should not be a big part of.
Well, let me tell you what. Don't worry, this book's great and actually straight up goes, hey, voodoo's a real religion, and in the world of Chill, it's like, we're gonna split it up into voodoon, the actual religion, and voodoo, a corrupted form of the religion that evil spirits have taken over.
Fine. That's actually fine. That's actually... I wasn't that worried about this. Like, I'll tell you my strongest memory about Chill at all. It was passable for the most part. The thing I remember the most is the weird-ass, semi-poetic writing that was, like, all over the book. Because it was, like, they had this serial killer named, like, Rax or something, and he kept, like, having dumb quotes. And that's the number one thing I remember, was him being, like, sweeter still than the hyper-sucralose kiss of womanity or whatever the fuck.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, like, his weird nonsense shit. It was the primary thing I remember. Just from the cover, I'm saying that doesn't look very trustworthy, but...
Oh, no, the reason I picked it is I was like, oh, God, it's early 90s, and they're going to talk about voodoo, and it's a horror game, which means they're going to try and make, like, you are making voodoo into, like, a horror thing. Oh, God, what are they doing?
I assume they're the closest they're going to, like, my natural assumption is the closest they'll get to any kind of, like, realistic, like, or care with the way that they handle it is that they'll spell zombie without the E at the end.
Which they do.
They do. So the zombie with an I?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, that was my first guess.
they have a whole beginning of this thing is like, let me tell you the actual history of like voodoo and how it started and, you know, the slave trade and Haiti and, you know,
do they get into the
uprising and
do they get into the other similar religions like Candomblé and stuff too?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool to hear.
They're
okay.
Like, you know, these certain Loa are, you know, can trace very easily to certain West African deities from certain religions. Obviously, there are like Catholic influences that will have certain things where like the religion actually is like, yeah, we believe in like Jesus, but he's too busy and important for you to actually pray to, which is why the Loa are around, because they're animistic spirits that you can deal with.
I mean, is that all that far off from Catholics and all the saint stuff?
Hey.
I don't know that work for like, can you just skip that? Can you be like, oh, God, I can't remember who the fucking patron saint of the internet is. Fuck it. Jesus, handle this. Is that is that a regular Catholic
usually,
trick?
Well, it depends, because you have some that are like, oh, the one you really want to go to is Mary, because she can intercede on your behalf for Jesus. So she's like, Jesus will get angry if you try and get uppity and talk to just him. So you go to Mary because she's nice and she'll be like, hey, son, would you mind helping me out?
So in Catholicism, Mary is Jesus' agent?
Kind of. I mean, that's much more of like a Mexican Hispanic level Catholicism.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
There's
a lot of Catholicism.
I don't need to get into all the weird Catholicism.
We were just talking
shit
about all the angry letters we got for doing Testament D20 at all. I'm not making that mistake again.
Oh, yeah. And I actually, you know, have a friend who practices voodoo, like is an actual practitioner. I am well aware of the, you know, normal religious aspects of it.
I also have a friend who's a Catholic priest, so I don't want to get too deep into that.
Man. But yeah, I was very surprised that they would do that and do as like the person who actually wrote this did their fucking homework.
That's awesome. That's like, actually that is actually good to hear. Based entirely on the cover, I was worried, but now I'm feeling better.
Oh yeah, like they will throughout the book reference certain books and talk about like some scholars believe whatever. However, because it's such an insular community and you don't really like get answers if you're just some white guy doing research,
right,
it's much harder to tell about certain things. And so they're like, yeah, we split it up into voodoo and the Hollywood version of voodoo,
right?
But the whole idea of chill was there was the unknown, which is some other dimension where evil shit is.
Okay.
And at some point spirits from the unknown came out and decided to essentially like act as if they were Loa.
Okay. But they're not Loa.
No. And for the most part, the people who are the actual like Bokors or Hungans that deal with them know that.
Okay.
They know that they're dealing with the false Loa and that these are just spirits, but the ones who deal with them are like, well, I'm doing this for prestige or just for the power that comes with it. Or now, whatever it happens to be.
So that brings up the obvious initial question. Do they purport the existence of the real Loa too?
So you never, I mean, you're not going to get stats on the actual Loa.
Well, I'm sure.
You get stats for the false Loa though.
Okay. So they can be stopped. But like, so you can be ridden by the real Baron Samedi or the fake one, but they're both in there.
Well, the book does a whole thing where they're like, people have questioned why the spirits haven't just essentially taken over the entire thing and been like, yeah, anytime anyone does any voodoo practice, they just show up and are like, yeah, fuck you, I'm Ogun, get fucked.
Right.
And they're like, there are many different reasons why people think this. One is they assume that the false Loa are afraid of the true Loa don't want to fuck with them.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, honestly, the moment you started talking about this, I just immediately pictured how every pantheon in Rifts works, where they're like, here's the Greek pantheon. Here's the almost Greek pantheon, where they put a Y in Athena in the middle there. and then here's the one that's just like a mercenary company named after the Greek pantheon. And I'm like, how come the real Greek pantheon doesn't get pissed at the other two and clean up? And there you go. Good explanation.
Yeah. So the false Loa generally will have their followers and leaders who, as I said, for the most part, the leaders know if the followers don't.
Okay.
But occasionally you'll get someone who's like, this started in, I want to say, the 1910s is when they said these false Loa showed up and started this split.
Okay.
So there are some who have been like servitors in this false voodoo that have been there like for their whole lives and grown up in it.
Oh yeah,
and,
generational at this point.
Yeah, so yeah. They're like, there are some who have been brought into it from childhood that don't know that they're serving a false Loa, but the traditions and all of the rituals and rites have gotten darker. And so you have that sort of like, oh, we're much more like human sacrificey now. And, you know, we've got evil powers and we put curses on people.
I mean, I appreciate this, although it feels like it's primarily just a long walk to make it okay to kill voodoo guys.
Well, the thing is, you still have normal voodoon.
Yeah.
And you have a split between them where now you have the nouveau get split in the term so that you have the Vobokor. And those are basically the evil sorcerers that use voodoo to be bad guys and are running voodoo cults. Whereas you have things like the Nuhungan or Mambo that are actually following voodoon
right.
and have powers.
Right.
And they fight against the false voodoo priests.
Okay, so you've got good guy, original flavor, real voodoon guys versus... fakety-fake demon spirit from the other side voodoo guys.
Yes.
And also your save agents, which can probably be members of the first group, but also might need help in fighting off agents of false Loas.
Yeah, so there's an adventure in the voodoo supplement that is basically just like a voodoo cult shows up in whatever city you happen to be in as save agents.
Okay.
Because the book goes on and on about like, you know, normally Dominican Republic, Haiti, a few other places like, you know, Louisiana have an actual tradition for this. But the demonic influence is trying to spread to other things. So these false spirits are trying to pop up cults in places so that you might encounter them without being like, I go to Haiti and kill Haitians, which isn't a great look.
It's not like Haiti needs any help.
No.
The world has more or less decided.
Yeah. So if you do want to set a game there, they were like, you can be like a Nuhungan or Mambo. You can do that if you want to. Or you can just be agents that go there based on rumors and then get contacted by them and you kind of help them out.
I like that. Conceptually, I like the idea of false Loa because in my head, I'm already spinning up ideas for what that would look like and how you could make it like affect the world. You could be like, oh, well, obviously the rise of zombie movies is a product of the false Loa people because they're like, oh, we're going to cheapen the brand and the legacy it'll be easier to hide in plain sight if everyone knows what zombies are because they're, you know, in Night of the Living Dead.
Well, you have... In the book, you have physical and spiritual zombies.
Okay.
You have that sort of, you know, you take a potion or a powder that causes you to go into a death-like trance.
Mm-hmm.
You get pronounced dead, buried, and then, you know, dug up a couple days later. And then because of the experience and the psychotropics, you're just sort of easily manipulated.
Right.
Physical zombie. And then with the supernatural stuff, they're like, oh, there are spiritual zombies where they do literally just take your spirit out of your body and then you kind of shamble around and do whatever they tell you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that as well, because obviously the Hollywood take on zombies is very different from the voodoo, candomblé kind of takes on zombies as a concept.
And they also have in there one of the things, because in addition to, you know, just the background, they have in Chill the evil powers for... The bad guys are called the Evil Way.
Okay.
And that was all the shit where it's like, oh, Jason can teleport in front of you or a vampire can hypnotize you, shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a whole bunch of new ones. They also have The Art, which was for the good guys, and they have some new things like that. The book introduces the Twilight Art, or Art of the Twilight, which is in voodoo, there's a, you know, the concept of things aren't bad or good. It depends on how you use them. So,
sure,
like,
yes.
Baron Samedi can be someone who, you know, guards over the graveyards mm-hmm. and is a protective spirit. But if you wanted to murder someone, you'd still have to deal with him.
Plus, he's a fun party guy.
Yeah, super fun.
Everyone loves hanging out with that dude. All the time.
All the time. And so the book's like, yeah, these are powers that you can use that are kind of not quite only good or evil. You could use them however, but this is mostly what the new Hungan and Mambo have, are these sort of in-between powers.
Okay.
But there's a danger to them, because if you use them, a false Loa might notice you.
Oh, you
because
don't want that.
It's sort of evil.
Yeah, you don't want some sort of like faux Shango picking up on your trail or whatever.
Oh yeah. Because there are also, like, you know, red sects and black sects of the different religions, where it's like, you know, you have your own groups that are insular and trying to, like, sniff out either, you know, people who are trying to infiltrate them, or they'll do, like, their own justice on a community if someone wrongs someone, shit like that.
So it sounds like it's ultimately a complex and Byzantine web of allegiances and real and false gods.
Oh, yeah.
And their many worshippers who may or may not be in on the game.
But one of the things I was mentioning when I was going through that was, when you were talking about the whole Hollywood zombie thing, is mm-hmm. one of the items you can get in here, because, of course, there are a bunch of, you know, magical items and whatnot, is a voodoo doll.
Okay.
Which
yeah.
does not exist in the Voodoo religion.
No, of course it does not.
It's just a whole cloth made up bullshit thing.
Uh-huh.
But they were like, yeah, it got to the point where the false Loa were like, that's become such a Hollywood ingrained idea that they've begun to incorporate it into their own version of the religion.
Now I'm kind of curious to see how much stuff from, like, Hollywood voodoo has made its way into the false voodoo. So it's like so much easier to join it, because you're like, well, I want to raise zombies. So which skull in this room do I spit rum at? And they're just like, that one. Great. We got him. It doesn't.
Well, yeah,
that's not how any of this works.
No. And it's why they're able to do things like, you know, oh, we have a voodoo cult that pops up in, like, you know, Michigan or something,
yeah.
is because they're like, oh, because these idiots don't know any better. And it's much harder for the false Loa in Haiti, because when they ride a horse or possess one mm-hmm. of the servitors, they have to pretend to be the Loa that they are calling on. So they have to act the way, ask for the clothes, the food, the trappings. They have to give a full, like, presentation of, oh yeah, no, I'm definitely Ogun. You can believe me on that. And they'll use their evil powers to try and, like, use prophecy or read people's minds so they can pretend to be the true Loa.
Mm-hmm.
But with people that don't actually know the true Voodoon and aren't based in it, they're like, oh, we don't need to worry about that shit. We can just do whatever the fuck we want.
I'll just believe whatever I may have heard a Wiccan person say a while ago. Oh, you got a bag of pennyroyal or whatever? Great. That must be voodoo. I believe it.
What do you got? Goofer dust? Great.
Two chicken bones and a penny that was buried at a crossroads? That's magic. I'm worried that all these things I'm saying that sound like just dumb Hollywood stuff might actually be part of
voodoo. Oh, they're not in the book.
So no. That's why I'm going to be like, stop in a second.
No. It's I mean, the most Hollywood shit you get is the voodoo doll
mm-hmm.
and then the kind of the zombies. They
right.
have, like,
the two biggest things anyone knows about actual voodoo. And I'm saying this realizing that I'm probably crossing a bunch of lines, because right about halfway what you're talking to a second, I was like, wait, where do I know any voodoo shit from? Oh, wait, William Gibson novels and Rice novels and the Scion role-playing game.
Yeah.
I do not have a strong track record for proper original sourcing on why I know anything about this.
Oh, yeah. And it's so sad when you actually know anything and you look at, like, something like the Scion voodoo pantheon and you're like, oh, oof, ouch, owie, don't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, oh, you you really fucked up and made Legba real weird in this.
Yeah, like, literally when you were like, when Alola rides a horse, and I was like, I know exactly why that is. Wait, why do I know that? Oh, because AIs took the forms of Loas in the William Gibson Sprawl trilogy. That's probably not a good original source.
Maybe not. But that, again, is one of the nice things about the book, having all of the, like, you should probably read this, or here's a rundown of, like, if you want your people to see an actual voodoon ceremony in game, like, this is what the different Loa aspects tend to ask for, this is their trappings that they have, this is usually the type of personalities they'll do. And you're like, okay, great. You can kind of try and fake it.
Yeah.
It's an interesting book, honestly. A lot of even the magical items are mostly just like, it's a whip that when it cracks, the sound of it can stop like an evil ceremony from doing its magic.
Well, that's kind of cool. Yeah, I like that. That's very thematic for a magic item in a horror game.
Oh, yeah. You have, you know, a bunch of things that would actually be used in Voodoo Rituals. It's interesting. Some are just like little buffs. Some give you effects. The evil curses and shit that they have are all pretty much in the evil way. So you can be like, oh, I give someone a wasting disease and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the protection from it are on like actual voodoo practitioners.
Yeah.
Like the good guys are like, yeah, I can use spiritual protection to stop you from getting that, because the main chill book has like, oh, I have mind protection. Like, yeah, that'll stop a vampire from hypnotizing you, but it's not going to stop one of the false Loa from, you know, fucking your shit up.
Is that just a power level, or do you need just a whole different thing? Is that the...
It's just a different ability.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
It's essentially like, did you want to bring voodoo into your game?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, here's all that. Here's everything that goes with it,
mm-hmm.
and you can pick and choose if you want to, but, you know.
What if I
want
to bring all that into my game?
Oh, well, then you'll need to have some pants that are very large and filled with too many things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's so I can add the talent of Saggin' Baggin'.
Baggin' Saggin'.
Or Baggin' Saggin'.
Bagger Vance.
I'm not an expert, John. My sources for knowing all about all that are very limited. I know a lot about wasting diseases because I've read some Stephen King.
Ah, yes. I know all about the Roma because I read Thinner. Oops.
Oops, owie. Well, luckily I didn't say I know a single thing about the Roma. I clearly do not.
But yeah, no. Like I said, super pleasantly surprised by the book. It adds, you know, a level of stuff that you can do. There is, even in the suggestions in the back, they're like, if you want to just add that in the background, you can kind of do it, have some trappings, or even like whispers of it you don't need to fully incorporate. And if you want to, either have it be just a false cult, or maybe one of your players is from Haiti and is either inducted into it, or they have things called wild talents, where occasionally someone who just practices will stumble upon being able to do stuff for real.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds neat. And also, I'm looking at the, I'm sorry, I took the book from you because I there's like an art piece on the cover where like a dude is probably doing a voodoo ritual. And on closer inspection, I realized that he is almost definitely actually a black guy. And all my calling him a David Bowie stuff is just because I can only see that he's done in a negative.
Yes.
But I thought for a second he was tearing the original chill book in half. Because I can only see it from a distance.
Fuck this book.
As if that was like a dramatic statement on the cover. But no, instead I have no idea what that is. Maybe it's a dimension being torn open.
Well, there's a lot of symbols that the different Loa have.
Right.
So if that was one of the things in the book, they're like, oh, the false Loa know who to impersonate because of the symbols that get drawn during the ceremonies.
That's cool.
So they're like, oh, you're drawing the symbol for Legba. I know who I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, well, I was looking at the adventure, and it looked like it was actually kind of an interesting adventure, like false voodoo has infected your hometown, and you have to go solve it.
Yeah.
The few things I remember about Chill that are now starting to come back to me are, like, one of the things I remember disliking about it was that you had to roll to see if the enemies could do, like, their basic enemy things.
Yes, they have their own powers,
yeah.
And it's not just, oh, I teleport when I want. It's, you roll to do that.
Yeah, so you'd be like, well, I'm running away from, you know, Michael Myers, and they'd be like, well, he teleports to the room you're in because he's Michael Myers, and that's his power. He's not really, but that's his cinematic convenience is Michael Myers' power.
Yeah, and I mean, in the episode, we were like, yeah, when it fails, it just means that you get a jump scare that isn't them.
Yeah, you get something different, or you get a moment to, like, have
you
a regular
Michael
scene.
Michael Myers is there, and then a cat jumps out.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, a crow flies into a window.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, it sounds neat.
Yeah, super neat. Definitely enjoy it. Way better than I thought it was going to be, so, hey. There you go.
It only needed to be like a C to be better than I was going to guess it was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, when I started that, I was like, oh, am I going to be like actually angry reading this?
Is this going to be a post-mortem?
I'm like, am I going to need to like retroactively cancel Chill? And I was like, oh, no. Okay, good. Although the book doesn't seem to realize that the main book said save was essentially destroyed, because it keeps talking about, like, yeah, save envoys, and maybe you'll ask them for some scientific help. And I'm like, you realize you said in the main book these guys are done.
Well, what they said was that, I think it was that save, the original organization was done, but there's, like, a new save, kind of like how there was a new Sphinx, you know, just to keep it on the Venture Brothers.
The new save is, like, you start your own faction, and it's you and your three friends in a fucking shitty apartment with a flashlight, and you go, hey, let's find out if ghosts are real.
Yeah, okay. It's not like I've listened to the episode recently, so I'm in no position to get in a big argument with you.
Yeah.
Also, what the hell did I want to delete earlier? I remember I wanted to do it at the 34 minute mark, but I don't remember what the fuck it was.
Oh, it wasn't at 34 minutes. Don't you worry about that.
Shit. This is my memory. I've already forgotten what I wanted to delete.
And I remember it, and I don't want you to.
I'm pretty sure I got that minute issue right. I just wanted to let you know that at this point, as we round towards the end of the episode, I've already forgotten what I was grumpy about. All I remember is a number for some reason.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. There's both of the books.
Cool. What would you say is your favorite thing about Chill the Voodoo expansion?
Honestly, the amount of research that went into it.
Okay.
Like, continually referencing books. It's like, oh yeah, these scholars in this book say this, according to whatever. Like, you can tell that whoever wrote this actually gave a shit. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just someone went, hey, we need a voodoo supplement, and grabbed whatever freelancer they could find.
Yeah.
So, I love that.
Okay.
What about you for supers?
I'm going to say, when I did the original episode, my favorite thing was that how well it hewed to the source material. Because it felt, in every respect, like a parody of G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. Like, they did a great job of coming up with ways to make the parody fit. And we read a lot of licensed games, and a lot of times that's where they fall apart. They just copy the stuff, and they don't really think about why it works in a role-playing game context. And this game did a great job of doing that. So luckily, I can move on. I say they still did that, and move on to something else I really liked. In this case, I'm going to say the XP mechanic of this game, which is slow, incremental, constant gains.
Yeah.
As opposed to breakpoint gains. I like the idea that you finish a mission, you roll a D10, you get 8, and you put it in your melee skill because you're like, fuck it, I want to be slightly better at melee right now. I did a lot of fighting this episode.
Yeah.
So that's neat. I also really like the siloing mechanic for the three types of superpowers.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was very clever. It's a great way to keep people from over-investing in a single thing. They even go out of their way to recommend, like, hey, look, the silos are there for a reason. They're to keep you from putting all of your points into one power. That said, you probably should put all your points into one power in that silo. You're not going to get a lot of benefit from having a 4 in every type of blast.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe have 3 or 4 really good powers that you're good at.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, that's one of those things I super appreciate. Even in the RPG that I've been tooling around with, it has 3 different pillars because I'm like, I don't want everyone to just go, I get combat powers because that's all I want to do. I'm like, no, please don't.
Every time you tell me you're still working on that thing, I'm amazed.
Yep.
It's not that I think you're not. It's just that I don't assume. I assume you're like, oh, I've been working on that recently. I'm like, yeah, like 8 months ago, maybe once for 10 minutes.
Ah. No, it's my noodle around project where I'm like, this will never actually come out because I'm going to continue to noodle on it forever.
I wanted to get into that. I was like, you know, we spend so much time reviewing role-playing games. It's high time we wrote one. And then I started writing cookbooks. I was like, well, never mind.
Oops.
No, it's not an oops. Look, game designers, write real books instead. Take it from me. They actually pay money. I get royalty checks.
Aw.
No offense, you're doing amazing things and you should keep doing them. Your creativity is laudable, but real books.
But you're chumps, the lot of you.
You aren't. I got lucky. John and I got lucky when someone offered us
work. Got lucky. That's why we come in columns.
Especially dorks.
Least favorite thing.
Your least favorite thing about Voodoo.
The
song.
Yeah. Oh, it sucks.
It's droning
ass,
and sucks
slow
ass.
And terrible.
It's the worst karaoke song ever written.
Yeah, and everyone who's like, I'm going to do this, thinks it's going to be great and it sucks.
They get up on stage, they fucking look at their feet because they're Dermot from the fucking Venture Brothers, and they're just like up there going, voodoo, voodoo. You say voodoo a lot in this song, don't you?
Yeah, I sure do. I voodoo.
Sorry, your least favorite thing about the game, though, the supplement.
The supplement, I think there's not a whole lot. Honestly, the only issue I think I really have is that so much of it, like the vast majority, is stuff you're not really going to use unless you specifically have like Haitian player characters, because a lot of it is like, no, there's, and the book even says like, yeah, unless you are literally like Haitian or Dominican or anything like that and have been brought up in this culture and then had an actual Hungan do the ceremonies and make you an actual priest, like, you're not, you, some white guy isn't just going to be like, yeah, and I know voodoo. And so I appreciate that, but it's also like, oh, it's very limiting, especially if you bring that into an established game. All you're really going to have is, oh, there's an evil voodoo cult.
I mean, you get that from time to time when you want to incorporate a real-world thing into a game, and then the first thing that people point out is that that real-world thing would never go on an adventure.
Yes.
If you're like, oh, I'm going to put monks in my game. You know, Florentine ones.
I've got nuns in my game now. I don't know why.
They're not battle nuns. They're regular type. They might help midwife.
Yeah, and so this one is very much like, unless you want to set your game in, like, Haiti, you're probably not using about 80% of this book, which isn't even, that's not a strong dislike. It's just a point against it in that it's not really a supplement that is generically useful.
Well, one thing I can say about both of these supplements is they don't try to just be like, book two, you know, and they have like a vast diaspora of everything.
Yeah.
They're both very focused and specialized.
They are what they are.
Yeah. So it's harder to find major points of contention because they're pretty focused.
Oh yeah, I mean, most of my major points of contention are going to be shit I didn't like about Chill rather than the supplement.
Exactly. Yeah,
so there you go.
So yeah, the only thing I would really say that is possibly a negative, and this is pretty subjective, one thing I want to point out, and this is a minor, I'm not going to go too deep into detail because I know they like their anonymity quite a bit, but Ace Agents is in our club of people where we know that their author of this book is a listener now. Like, along with Secret of Zeran and a couple of the Gamma World guys and so on. There's not a lot, but we know a few of them. So I don't, but here's the thing. I'm going to say the powers could have been wackier.
Ah!
And I know that sounds like a cop out of a thing, but really, when Ace Agents was a lot of fun because it was kind of a fun send up of G.I. Joe, and it really lent itself well to doing parody versions of G.I. Joe where you could, you know, make Osmosif K trees or whatever. But here, the powers are kind of just like Fire Blast, turn your skin to steel. Shit you'd see the X-Men do. And I was kind of hoping for something a little more in theme for the world.
Okay.
Or at least something that defined the world's theme a little more out of the power set.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about it. I would have liked to see the powers. When I finally got to them while reading the book, I was like, oh, cool, here we are. Oh, Fire Blast. Oh, thick skin. Okay. Yeah. Laser eyes. Gotcha. Yep. Mm. Yep. I just wasn't feeling it. I wasn't like enamored.
I'm feeling it.
You're really feeling it?
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. But that said, I really like the supplement. Would you play Chill Voodoo?
No, because, I mean, I don't really want to play Chill all that much.
Right, right.
As far as horror games we've done are concerned, it's probably one of the more playable ones.
Yeah, and certainly if you're considering ones that are a little more generic, I think some of our, like, I'd say games like Whispering Vault are actually fairly easy to play. But when it comes to like a generic, this is a horror game simulator game,
yeah,
then it's certainly probably my favorite of those.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's just the fear effects that are a problem.
Yeah.
And even then, unless, I mean, this has a bestiary in it of like animals that are sort of fucked up voodoo and spirit animals.
Yeah.
That'll be like, oh, here's a giant snake that fucking attacks you.
Yeah.
Those have actual fear ratings. But for the most part, like, a zombie has a fear rating of 1. It's not exactly like, oh no, there's a dude shuffling around.
Well, especially here when a zombie can be like that regular kind of...
Well, yeah,
like,
they have zombies,
yeah,
Hollywood zombies in the Chill book, main book, And those are spooky because it's an undead guy.
But here they're just like an easily manipulated person who probably smells like dirt.
Yeah, it's just someone shuffling around, probably farming for somebody.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh no.
So could potentially be less scary. That said, you know, for the chill thing, I would say, how many games are we already customarily ignoring all the fear rules of anyway?
Oh, it's true.
Like in Palladium games, every one of them's got fucking horror factor. Have you ever rolled that shit once in your life?
Oh, of course I have.
Not me. We always skip that shit.
Oh, I did it, but mostly it was because it was like, here's the thing that has a horror factor of 16 and it actually matters, unlike the millions of things that are like, I'm horror factor 9, there's no way you'll fail this.
Right. And the same thing with D&D and morale tests, no one rolls that shit.
Yeah. It's... No, I'd give it a chance, but this is, you know, because of the subject matter, one of those things where you're like, but you'd want someone to run this that wasn't just a real big piece of shit and just there for the Hollywood voodoo.
It is definitely a game where there's a tightrope walk between who can really run this in a way that it isn't going to suck.
Oh, yeah. And you'd also want to be like, yeah, I don't want my fat white guy to play the Haitian, like, Bokor, so let's not do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go. Mm-hmm. I probably would under the right circumstances. And for Ace Supers.
Well, neat thing about Ace Agents is that we both said we'd play it.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, we didn't say that a lot in the early games.
No, not really.
So this is an early one. We were both like, hell yeah, this game seems neat and it's pretty easy to put a character together. It seems like we'd play it. And this is just that game plus superpowers, which you already know I love superpowers.
Oh, yeah. You know, I love superpowers.
Yeah. It's generally my favorite genre to read the books from is supers. So I would absolutely play this. Just like I would play Ace Agents. It seems like it's a fun send-up. You could have a good time doing this, no problem. Is it the best Supers game when I run it, like, as my primary Supers game? Probably not, but, you know, it's something I could see running at a convention or something.
And there you have it.
And there you have it.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Please join us again.
Yeah, and if you want more, Jeff's going to make an Ace Super. I'm going to make a chill dude, and we are going to have those in our bonus content if you head over to patreon.com/systemmastery. Join us at the bargain basement dollar level. You will unlock the System Mastery bonus content where we make characters in these games. And you'll find out what happens when we stop being fake and start getting real.
I was thinking that and I didn't say it. Literally because I was seeing if you were going to.
Yep. I was looking at you and I'm like, I know you're thinking this.
Might as well cut me off. The only thing I didn't want to do was have a jinx scenario.
But yeah, patreon.com/systemmastery. Check us out. It's great fun. And a lot of times we'll have some insights and discoveries from making the character that doesn't quite get to make it into the episodes.
Yeah, you'll learn more from the bonus episodes than you would from just the primary episodes. I mean, obviously, because it's yet more content. But sometimes stuff that we forgot to say or that we didn't realize until we made characters shines, and we have a lot more to talk about. It's absolutely worth the dollar. It's the best investment for value.
Hell yeah.
You get two extra podcasts a month for $2 a month. I mean, it's a great deal. Who else is doing that?
I don't know. Probably somebody.
Other podcasts are doing that for sure. Who else is doing that we're aware of?
No one.
There you go.
Because I'm not aware of most podcasts.
Can't beat those odds.
And of course, it is difficult times monetarily for a lot of people. We understand if you can't spare anything or just don't want to give us money, that's obviously okay.
That's why you send us cans of soup.
Send us a rock where we can make our own rock soup.
Ooh, stone soup.
And you can, of course, give us a nice rating review anywhere you're listening to us on Spotify or Stitcher or whatever. That way we'll, I don't know, maybe pop up as a recommended thing. Let's fuck up that algorithm so that we actually get recommended to people.
Oh my God, that'd be crazy.
Right? If every single person listening right now were to be like 5 stars and then for no reason Spotify was like, hey, you should listen to this.
I would love to see that happen because in like an en masse kind of situation, because normally what I'm used to is watching the story of people recommending us on Twitter, and then 4 out of 5 times the response that comes back is, what the fuck? Why did you recommend this bullshit to me?
I was looking for someone to just fillet games I like. How dare you?
We get that too, but also just we're kind of loose and disjointed, and I think they're waiting for someone who's got a bit more of a like a Radio Lab style where they randomly add music cues and have random extra voices pop in.
Yeah, I don't need wind chimes and then telling you it's our new segment, whatever. You can go fuck yourself. We do things raw and uncut.
And veiny and ribald. All right, thanks everybody. We'll see you in a week or 2 weeks with yet more exciting System Mastery content. Until we do, you all have a good one.